you would have asked me in late 2003, early 2004, I would have told you that I felt like I just was living the perfect life. A beautiful wife, three kids. We had our fourth on the way, you know, due any time. We had just moved to a new house, had great schools, you know, great neighbors. I have and still have today a very a good job where we do work that I feel makes a difference. I work with good people that I respect. I mean, just everything, I mean, it couldn't be better. And one of the great things was with the fourth child on the way, we were very excited that Emily, our youngest, had just started preschool, because that meant that instead of having three kids at home, mommy would have one kid at home, and there'd be time that, you know, to be spent with the baby instead of other people running around. So she also went off to preschool and was one of our kids that you dropped off, and she looked and she said, "See you later. I'm very happy." There wasn't crying, there wasn't any fussing. It was just it was going great. And at the end of January, after school, she came down with a fever. Really, she took a nap first, and that was unusual, and then later a fever. And we took her to the physician the next day. I think mainly because we were worried that there was a lot of strep going around, so we just wanted to check it out. And there we learned that she had the flu, and this was Thursday. And this was the first of our kids that had the flu. My wife, neither of us could recall having the flu, so this was new to us. And you know, the discharge instructions were watch hydration and for high fevers. We did a little research too, and that confirmed that about flu. And we kind of just set in and said, okay, she's going to be sick for a little while. And they told us to expect, you know, it's not a two-day virus or anything, and she'll have those fevers, and you just have to manage them. And our biggest worry, and this is hard to say now, but our worry at the time was the baby's coming in 2 weeks. If everybody gets sick, dad's real busy at work, what's going to happen? You know, that's what we worried about. And I feel guilty saying that right now, but, you know, that sort of was, the house can't come crashing down because all the kids get sick and mom gets sick and a new baby comes along. She, you know, intermittently would be sick, and then, you know, high fevers, we saw that. We saw some nausea later on as we got into the weekend. You know, she would be sick, and then she would get a little bit better, and then she, you know, walk around and get something to eat. But we started seeing a lot more nausea on Sunday, and I remember Sunday being Super Bowl Sunday, and I remember it being we were starting to get a little bit more worried that she was this sick, and we called the pediatricians on call, and we were thinking, you know, she dehydrated. It's been so long, and we haven't seen her go to the bathroom in a while. And of course, right before the doctor calls back, she goes to the bathroom, and we think, okay, we're just over-worried, you know, we're making too much of this, as we've done in the past with our other kids. And the doctor asked us, is she, you know, there are coffee grounds in her vomit, things like that, and there weren't. And Sunday night was a really bad night. My wife was very tired, and I ended up staying up, you know, sitting in a chair. Emily was sleeping in our bed. And I just remember after such a long night, and just seemed like she just kept throwing up, and you just worry, is the medicine in? Did she get the medicine? Did it not get in? How much came out? And you never know, and there's this tremendous uncertainty because you're not a professional, and you just don't know what to do. And so when we woke up in the morning, we said, we really want a professional to look at her. We got to get her into the doctor. And so we called, and they were very busy. There was a lot of sick kids, but they got an appointment at 1 o'clock that day. And so we did the things you would do if you were taking someone to the doctor, which meant that we gave her a bath. She stood in the bath while I bathed her. You know, we cleaned up. I went down and answered some work emails. And around 10:30, 10:45, I heard this scream from my wife. And I, you know, it's the kind of thing that you, you know, it's different when you hear it, and something you never want to hear again. And when I made it up the stairs, she said that Emily wasn't breathing and she was trying to resuscitate her. And I ran down and I got the phone, called 911, took over from my wife. And, you know, I remember just a few things pretty distinctly. You know, one of those is it just seemed like it took such a long time for the paramedics to get there. You know, the time slowed down. And I remember how weird it was to, you know, you see these things on TV, but you don't ever think that you'll do this. And I remember how weird it was in my head, sort of some part thinking, you know, I'm doing this and I can see her chest go up when I do this. And thinking about, you know, is it 5-1 or 15-2? What did we learn? How are you supposed to do this? Am I doing it too soft to not be effective? And that was, for a period of time, a tremendous source of guilt for me that we did not do that very well. I also remember, you know, there was a series of clues for us, and I think when the paramedics came, it was such a relief. I thought, well, now they're here, they're going to take over, and, you know, they know what they're doing, and this is going to go the right way. But it's a kind of relief that started fading, because as I listened to them talk and I looked at their faces, there really were clues. I mean, there was a lot of concern, and it wasn't reassuring. And we made it to we went to our local hospital where they were able to get her heart started. We then went to our children's hospital. And another clue, we were met in the ambulance bay by the chaplain. So, you know, maybe other people didn't pay attention, but it wasn't lost on me that most people don't get met by a chaplain in the ambulance bay. So they started stacking up. And I don't know that the physicians were, you know, that they were very clear that this was a very, you know, serious situation. And our little girl was in a lot of trouble. And, you know, they worked in the PICU. You know, towards, you know, as it got around 8 or 9 o'clock that night, it became very clear that, you know, they had reached doses of meds to keep her blood pressure up that were the maximum doses. And so we ended up leaving that night. Which is a strange thing too, as a parent. You know, just the sort of going someplace and then leaving your child, not leaving with them. And I'm sorry, that's probably me. Get that away from the mic. So we went home that night, and the next morning we told our boys that their sister had died, and started a period of, it's just so shocking to us that from Wednesday healthy to Monday not being with us anymore, and it's so fast. She was just a healthy, she didn't have any problems, healthy, strong, smart, just an amazing girl. So in the aftermath of this, 13 days later, our daughter Anna was born. And at the time, we didn't know, you know, how are we going to do this? You know, you just have no energy. But we did. I mean, she was there, and she needed our help and attention, and we had help from people. And after we took care of kind of the essential things, there was this period of, we really have to understand this. You know, how did this happen? You know, kids, and by the way, this is actually the last picture when Emily was sick. That's her brother Andrew right there. I think I'm clicking. There we go. So one of the things that we started to learn is that, you know, gosh, it's just the flu is not right. We were shocked, really, to find out, not only in that year, which was 2003-2004, the very bad flu season, how many kids, and healthy kids, that die of influenza, and how many people overall. I mean, that blew my mind. We did not have Emily vaccinated. We didn't have any of our children vaccinated. Now, there wasn't a recommendation at the time in her age group, but even if there was, to be honest with you, I probably wouldn't have thought very much about it. I get my flu shots at work because it's there, it's easy, and I always have because I've always worked in healthcare settings where they're made available. And I never thought about my kids, and I never worried about my kids. And I think that around the country, there's so many parents who are like me, and as I'll talk a little bit later, I mean, we really see one of the key roles in our organization, Families Fighting Flu, is to help educate parents, you know, let them know that the flu is something that deserves your attention, and your children do need to be protected from influenza. So just to kind of bridge into this, because I've used a lot of time, and I apologize, there was a period of time where we were trying to discover what was going on, how did this happen, and talked to a lot of physicians. And there was a physician with the CDC, a guy by the name of Timothy Uyeki, who answered an email, several emails for me, very long emails, and it was clear that this was someone who went above and beyond, because they weren't short, they weren't scientific, they were after hours in many cases, and I really appreciated that extra attention by this individual, and who I've since met. And in one of them, he mentioned another mom that he had corresponded with. And this mom had set up a charity named after her daughter in New York. And he mentioned the name of this family, and I went to the website, and I got in touch with this mom. And it turns out that she had been in touch with a few other families that had also lost kids to influenza. And that is what became Families Fighting Flu, this group of parents. Now, we've grown since then, unfortunately. And what we do, we think of as very simple, that we do what we can by sharing our stories. We can help educate parents everywhere on why it's important to vaccinate. And we have, for a number of years, been strongly advocating for universal recommendations for influenza vaccination. And we have a wide range of ages in our group, and so some kids were covered, where education is important, and some weren't covered, there wasn't a recommendation. And fortunately, I think this year we've seen a major step in that direction, which is fantastic. I have to say, I made the very biggest. I want to tell you, these are pictures of my daughter, Allie. Families Fighting Flu and Allie were two very important pieces in our family's healing from this. So I kind of gave you a snapshot of our family growing over the last 3 or 4 years. I do want to kind of talk a little bit about some of the activities that we have participated in as a group. In 2005, Families Fighting Flu was just getting its act together, kind of organizing. There's a lot of work involved that none of us would have thought, and kind of even in a small organization. But we had some successes. We were able to get a PSA together and get it out on some networks. We did some satellite media tours. We were very proud that we had two of our families, one on Anderson Cooper and one on Good Morning America, talking about our tragedies and the importance of vaccination. We did some mailings trying to let everybody know that we're here, we exist. We got a letter of support from the CDC. We didn't get a whole lot of letters of support from the other 550 congressional letters that we mailed out, but we, you know, it seemed like a good idea when we did that. And then in 2006, people were starting to become aware of us. We had a couple of our members go speak at the Immunize Georgia conference. My wife was one of them. We got an exhibit together at the American Academy of Pediatricians, I think. And I will say that we had a booth here. I didn't exhibit here, but I understand that the experience was far different exhibiting here than there. There we were as far away from everything that could, you know, as possible in the furthest corner facing the area where they have the spare chairs, and we did not get a lot of booth traffic there. But here, apparently, we've had a good location, and we've had a lot of people stop by, and so different experiences at the different conferences. Again, with our public service announcement, we were able to get it out on the CNN Accent Health and the airport network. And then one of our member families also participated in the American Lung Association's Faces of Influenza campaign and said that was a very good experience for them. This past year, we were a little more ambitious. We've done a few other things besides here, but the four main ones: spread the word, not the flu, which is, I shouldn't say this, but it was one of my favorites just because it involved children in a way that was unique. And I'll show you some slides. I'll just kind of jump into these this way. This was really neat because this is something that Families Fighting Flu did with Novartis and also with Weekly Reader. And it was an educational program that teachers, it came in a whole kit, and it was all assembled, it was prepackaged for different age groups, and they could come and talk about influenza and preventing influenza in there. Then the kids, based on what they learned, could electively, outside the classroom, enter into a poster contest. And there's a website that has the winning posters on there, and some of them are great. I happened to be one of the judges, and it was very, very difficult. Because the kids were amazingly creative, and there's just some wonderful examples. And the one that won, I think, in the 3 to 5 age group was one of my favorites. And I'm glad to see that the other judges kind of thought the same as I did, too, when they won. We also did a program with the National Association of Child Care Professionals. The feeling there was that we have all these kids that are in preschool. From what we learned, you know, these are kind of the vectors of influenza, and you know, you can learn that not from coming to conferences like this, but you walk into a preschool or daycare center and you watch kids rubbing and doing all this stuff, and it's just clear to everybody. So we put together educational programs to push out to daycare centers around the country. And again, we don't have a lot of our feedback on how well this worked. We're still gathering that. But our thought is that it was a good program that we'd like to continue to do. We also did a program called Cebu the Flu with our partners there were the Clorox Company and the Visiting Nurses Association of America. And what's neat about this campaign is that we actually have vaccination events. And so that was neat to us that, you know, in this past year, I believe we're in 18 cities around the country where you actually have a chance in a fun environment where there's activities for kids and the whole family can go and get vaccinated. And that was kind of important to our group that, you know, not only on the educational side, but maybe providing some opportunities through programs like this where people who might not get vaccinated can go and do so. And this is something that we hope again to do this year. And each one, as they're successful, maybe we can grow it just a little bit. I had to show you this because Clorox, being a big company, also sponsors a race car. And this is one of their Busch Series drivers. And for two races, they actually put the Cebu the Flu logo on the race car. And I had the opportunity with my kids to go out to one of the races and kind of see that whole scene. It was our first NASCAR experience, and it's our only one so far. But it was worth it, and very interesting. So as I said, you know, a lot of how do we measure our success as a group? I mean, we look at, you know, certainly we look at media, and when you get on, you feel like there's a certain number of people that see that. We do get a lot of responses on our website from parents after they do see something in the media or they see a story or they read something online. So we're encouraged that, at least observationally, that our activities are making a difference in reaching people who might not otherwise vaccinate their children and might not really worry about influenza. Some of the things that we see, and I know this is kind of new, but I think the thing we run into as we talk to parents everywhere is the misconception that flu is just the flu. I mean, if there's one thing that we can change out there is that, you know, people need to take this seriously. It's not just a cold. It's not something that you just get it and you move on. It's very dangerous. And after that, we do hear a lot of, you know, it's going to give me the flu, or I got vaccinated, I'm never going to do that again. I have conversations with people in my work that say that, you know, I got it 5 years ago, and then I got the flu, and so I'm never going to do it again. And then you have a group of people, you know, mainly I think this is parents as opposed to adults for that, who are worried about safety and a number of issues. And that's not something that we take on. We sort of stay out of that. We do from time to time get some nasty messages left on our email site. But that, you know, from our perspective, there's a lot of people out there who are passionate about certain things. And so we see that y'all are doing a good job, or the group as a whole. So I kind of mentioned this. I think this year has been interesting for us because for a long time, the universal vaccination message and advocacy has been a very important part of what we do, along with the educational piece. And I think now with recommendations, as a group, we're going to be focusing, you know, so much on education. How do we reach more people? How do we get to parents? Who can we partner with? You know, do all the people that need to know that we're here and our resource, and a lot of the people in this room and this community know that we exist and that we're willing to help, and we want to do things to use our stories to help improve vaccination rates. These are actually, all of the kids that you see up here are members of our group, and all of them died from influenza. And I know that there's hundreds more out there around the country, unfortunately, but these are our faces, the faces of our children that died of influenza. And I wanted to, for so long, I wanted to show you a picture. This is my daughter, Anna, who was born. This is her on her first day of preschool. And this is 2 months later, where we learned that she has leukemia in September. So this has been and I guess the thing that there's a kind of irony, I guess, that we see in this, in that, you know, we have been passionate about vaccination directly, to directly as a parent protect your kids. But this year we couldn't do that. So we had to really rely on all the vaccinations around her. So our, you know, it's a very vulnerable state when, you know, we know for several more years she'll be in chemotherapy and be immune suppressed. And we know that we'll have to probably revaccinate her, you know, depending on her titers when she's done over therapy. And we also know that as we look around and live in our communities, that she is protected by all the vaccinations, not just influenza. And that we are one of, I don't know how many, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of immune-suppressed kids out there that need the indirect herd effects of vaccination to help them. She takes a good picture. So there are my girls, and I guess the last thing I wanted to say is that the past 4 years of advocacy and work with influenza has brought me and others in our group into contact with people that we wouldn't know that are in the vaccine community and public health services. And without exception, I think everybody's found all those interactions and people to be so, so supportive, so passionate about what they do. And we've observed how the work that is done by the folks in this room can be so thankless and so behind the scenes. No one says thank you when you stab a needle into them. You know, they just don't. No one says thank you for electricity and things that just sort of run, that are supposed to run well and be there. You know, again, over the past 4 years, I've developed, and not just me, but other folks in our group and other states with different people, such an appreciation for the very hard work that everyone does. So thank you very much.